It's Central Time. I'm Rob Farage. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, how good a listener are you? No, really. Our guest says we'll be better friends and better people if we just listen to each other. First, the ninth season of the public television show Around the Corner with John McGivern is right around the corner. This year, John and the team visit communities around the state, including Marinette, Ashland, and Janesville, engaging with residents and just finding out what life is like there. When we last saw John, he was in Eau Claire in season 8. Here he is talking with a student on the UW-Eau Claire campus.
Where are we right now?
We're on the bridge, the famous footbridge.
And where does it go from where to where?
From Water Street to campus. It's the connector. It's really the connector. Have you ever heard of Bridge Face?
Bridge Face.
Yeah, no, Bridge Face. Walking across the bridge in dead of winter. When your nose hairs freeze and you're dripping icicles.
It's called Bridge Face.
Bridge Face, yeah.
And you get it?
Oh, yeah, for sure get it.
Only here.
If you choose to walk across the bridge, that is. That's why you take the bus. The hill and the bridge.
I've been on that bridge in the summer, and I've thought, what would that be like in the winter? Well, there you go. It's Bridge Face. The new season kicks off on Thursday, February 6th, with a trip to Milwaukee's Story Hill neighborhood. John McGivern is host and co-creator of Around the Corner with John McGivern. John, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Rob. Thanks a lot. I appreciate being on the air with you.
And Lois Maurer is with us, producer, director, and co-creator of the show. Lois, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you, Rob. Pleasure to be here.
Well, Lois, we'll begin with you. What are you trying to bring us on Around the Corner? What kind of taste of Wisconsin are you bringing us with each episode?
Well, it's the same thing we've been bringing since season one, Rob. All positive, all the time. All these communities that we go to have such great stories to tell, and we're only interested in the really fun, positive ones.
Otherwise, I don't want to do it, Rob, okay?
Right.
That's okay. And you feature an episode, or you feature in each episode or in each season an episode on an area of Milwaukee, and you're starting us off with this this new season in Story Hill. Tell us, John, about that.
Story Hill, you know, I was born and raised in Milwaukee on the east side, and I knew nothing about Story Hill, to be honest with you. And it's the when you tell people where it's at, then they understand and they say, oh, I know that community. And it's the community that's on the hill, right looking at Miller Park.
Just north of
Miller Park. And where Wisconsin Avenue and 35th kind of starts it right over the viaduct. And then there's this community that is really charming, full of these homes that were built between 1900 and 1950, and it's just a really kind of a diverse neighborhood with a great main street, which is Blue Mound, and I was surprised that I didn't know about it, and a surprise on how I wanted to then move there. Just so you know.
Well, and Lois, that's a big theme of the show. We've got so much stuff in Wisconsin that even if you lived your whole life here, we can still discover new things, right?
Oh, there's so much change, too. We have found that we could go back to communities we did already in season one, and they wouldn't even look the same now.
Right.
But they are really fun to discover things that you think that you're familiar with. Like John just said, Story Hill's in the city that we live in.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get on the ground and you start going up and down Blue Mountain, talking to residents and going into the businesses that are there, it makes you really proud for every community we cover. And that's the goal, is to make those people that live there even more proud of where they live.
And Rob, you know, we do these episodes, and then we go back to the community, we show it to them before it gets on television. And people who come to these community previews, who live in this community, who work in these communities, after we air the episode and show them the episode, I'm telling you, they raise their hands and say, we had no idea. Like, you told us something about our neighborhood, about our community that we had no idea about. So we love to claim the fact that we do that.
Well, I'm a little jealous of both of you because, you know, I get to talk to people from Wisconsin all the time via phone. You get to go out to where they live. How fun is that, John, to be meeting people in their own hometowns, their home neighborhoods?
You know, it's really great. And when we look back on 11, 12 years ago, when Lois and I, who have worked together making television before, decided that we wanted to work together almost full time, we came up with this concept. Little did we know that 9 years later, 117 episodes later, that, like, this is the best job I've ever had. And I'm old. So I'm telling you, you know, of all the work that I've done in my career, this is the favorite thing I've done, and the thing that I want to continue doing. I love it.
Talking to John McGivern and Lois Maurer with the show Around the Corner with John McGivern. They wander the state, meeting cool people and highlighting cool things. Want to hear from you, by the way, at 800-642-1234. What is something fun about the community you live in Wisconsin or nearby? Or is there a place you love to go that you think maybe doesn't get the love that it deserves? Call in and tell us about it. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Lois, it sounds like there's an embarrassment of riches. How do you go about picking where you're going to go, what you're going to check out in a new season?
Oh, you know, a lot of it now, Rob, has to do with the map, because we have been doing this for 9 years, and we have, you know, Wisconsin Public Television, now PBS Wisconsin, picked us up season one. So we have been going around the state now, and we don't want to get too concentrated in one area or the other. And I'll tell you, we could do this show for another 20 years and not go back to any of the towns we've covered. You talked about an embarrassment of riches. Yeah, our list every year that we sit down to say, hey, where do you want to go? It seems to be longer every year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And once you have picked community, John, how do you break down where you're going to go? Because even within one town, there's more than you could possibly cover in one serious visit.
You know, we have pre-producers that go up and take a visit to the community and do almost like secret shop, you know, because we're not bound by somebody telling us what we need to do and this is what you should do because we're part of the chamber. Like, that's not how we operate. So we have somebody who goes and comes back with 30 some things, and we have to limit that down to 11. To be honest, I don't do the pre-production. I don't do that.
I do.
I don't. Listen, Lois does it all. You know, and I'm the one that sits in the back of the van, and we get the list of people. You know, I get that list a week or so before, and I certainly Google where we're going, who we're talking to, and try to do a little research on what we're going to be doing that day. And then it's a matter of just going up and having conversations.
Except it takes 4 days, Rob. I love that people think that we, you know, when they see it on television, they're like, oh, you spent a day in Eau Claire. No, we spent 4 to 5 days in Eau Claire.
Well, but part of the fun, too, is it seems like you don't want to just hit the famous landmark in town or city X that everybody's heard of. You want to dig a little deeper, right, Lois?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it goes back to what John says. We want people in the community to discover along with our whole audience. So, you know, to cover all of the really touristy things, and I say that with a grain of salt because, you know, obviously we cater to tourism. But the first thing I think of is, if someone who watches this show went to this place that John is, would they have an experience like this? Mm-hmm. And I love the answer to be both yes and no, because there are places that we go that nobody else gets into, and ooh, we love that. Yeah. Right? We love to get onto the manufacturing floors and into the kitchens, mm-hmm. and, you know, places where our audience will never go. But they do follow this show. So we know they're going to show up in Eau Claire. And we know they're going to go to the campus, and they're going to go on that bridge that my son was on talking to John, by the way.
That was Lois's son I was talking to, just so you know.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we're so not above that.
Well, let's bring on a caller now. Dan is with us in Wisconsin Dells. Dan, hello.
Hello there. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say I've been watching your show since the beginning, and John, I just think that you have one of the greatest personalities. I met you for a short moment in the summer of 2012 when you were interviewing the owner from Lost Temple, an attraction in Wisconsin.
Oh, sure.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I also used to listen to you on KLH in Milwaukee, and I always loved the stories that you told about your mother, especially the one with the Christmas story. And maybe you could tell those guys that one off the air with one of the statues.
Uh-oh. Okay.
I told that story many times. I just want to say thanks, John. Keep up the good work.
Thank you so much.
Dan, thank you so much for the call. Yeah, John, do you feel like you know, everybody sees you kind of like a neighbor after they've been watching the show for a while?
Do you know, I hear it a lot, which it's not such a bad thing. I'm like, well, that's really kind. People are always kind. You know, people approach me all the time, especially in you know, the Milwaukee area, and people are like, oh, does that bug? It never bugs me. People are always – it's always positive. They're always really kind to me, and you know, there's nothing – there's nothing.
Well, and when it comes to you, what you see on television, Rob, is what you get. So that's why people watch and they feel like they know him because he's
that
so,
is him.
You know, yeah. I mean, without John, obviously, the show wouldn't be here. But
just a simple man from Milwaukee.
We're talking about some of the best places in Wisconsin to live, work, and play with the creators of the public TV show Around the Corner with John McGivern. We've got John and the show's producer, Lois Maurer. They're the co-creators of the show. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What is your favorite community in the state and why? What separates your community or town, your city from all the others in Wisconsin? Or is there a place you like to travel to away from home in the state that you want to put in a plug for, too? Or if you have a question for John or Lois about the show, the places they've been or are going to go, call in now, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking to John McGivern and Lisa Maurer, co-creators of the show Around the Corner with John McGivern. You can see that on PBS Wisconsin and Milwaukee's public television as well. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Which Wisconsin community is the most fun and why when you travel around the state? Is there something particular you look for that you love to find, people you like to meet, sites you like to see? Call in at 800-642-1234. Go back to your calls now. Jackie is with us in Hillsboro. Jackie, hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I really appreciate what the last guy said. I really enjoy the show as well. I will admit I haven't watched every single episode, but I really, really enjoy it.
Well, you can, Jackie.
I will get there. I don't have enough hours in my day.
Okay.
So, I'm calling from Hillsboro, shamelessly plugging my own town. I know. So we are a town rich in Czech heritage. We are nestled in the Driftless area of southwest Wisconsin. We're in Vernon County, not too far from, well, I guess we're on the opposite end of the county from Viroqua.
Okay.
I think you guys have been there.
Loved Viroqua.
We loved it.
This is a year of big growth for us in Hillsboro. We are putting up a new hospital. Should be done soon. We have a drag strip going in, and we have a brewery. They make their own beer there with some fantastic food. Oh, my goodness. They're rebuilding the dam after floods a few years ago so we can have our lake back so it's not just a puddle.
Jackie, I'm going to jump in. I want to bring John and Lois in with us now. I called you Lisa a minute ago. Lois, I'm sorry about that.
I called her worse, Rob. Just
okay,
so
good.
You know.
To my
I won't
face.
Call you late. Won't call you late for dinner.
Right.
But Jackie, a booster for Hillsboro there. Do you meet a lot of people like that where you feel the pride coming off of them?
All the time. Yep. All the time. Mm-hmm. Not only do we meet them in person, but I hear from them via email. And, you know, people love where they live. That's one of the magic. That's kind of the magic to this show. When you talk to people about something they're passionate about, and they're passionate about their communities.
And as Jackie was talking, Lois was writing, just so you know, and that's how
drag strip.
So yeah, right. And you know, and we'll get back to studio, and Lois will then Google Hillsboro, and we'll put it on. You know, there's a list that's been around forever, and we take that list, and as Lois said, we look at a map and we try to go all over the state, because what happened first couple seasons is that Minnesota Public Television picked us up, or Twin
TTW,
Cities Public
yeah.
Television
mm-hmm.
picked us up right away, and then
Chicago right away.
Chicago right away as well. So mm-hmm. we tried to get closer to the borders where people could come and visit those communities that they saw that, you know, their air was playing us.
Jackie, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go to Charmaine now in Hudson. Charmaine, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What do you want to tell us about?
Good. Well, actually, they came to Hudson, and I have to tell you, I use the footage. I'm a teacher, and I use it in my classroom to teach the kids some of the things they don't even know about their own city.
Wow.
So it's been super great to have that. And then I'm originally from Milwaukee, and okay. a lot of my mom's, I don't know, what do you call them, lady friends, saw it, and they came up here for an extended weekend and just went everywhere that they could that you had on there. So it's kind of been cool, and it's touched us in a lot of different ways, but it's fun to be able to use it in the classroom.
Fantastic. That's got to be great to hear, eh?
Oh, completely.
We love to hear that. And we hear that a lot as well as far as teachers. We, you know, you're all going to go to heaven quick, you teachers.
Not that quick.
Well, not quick. I don't mean they're going to go soon, but when it's time, they're going to go to heaven. You know, and the fact that they can use us as a tool, I just think it's great.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for that call. I want to ask a more general question for both of you. Do you have advice for the rest of us based on your experiences on just how to travel around the state, how to be have our radar open to the cool stuff that we might walk by otherwise?
That's a really good question. I do a lot of that pre-production that John talked about, so I am good at going through the towns. And I'll tell you one very, very simple thing. Look up. You know, we go through and we look on the first floor of every building as you drive by. You miss what else is there. And you have to get off Main Street. Main Street is adorable. It's always adorable if you're lucky. And go down the other side of the street. Drive through the neighborhoods. Look at the homes. Look at the architecture. And you'll get a feel for what's there. And then, of course, the other piece of advice is get out of your car.
Right.
You've got to go talk to people. Walk into the diner. Even if you don't want to eat there, walk into the diner. Just see who's there. Say hello, because I'm telling you, they will all say hello back. One question, you're going to be there for half an hour.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Anything to add to that, John, apart from, you know, have an advanced team go check stuff out for you?
Right.
I'm thinking of adopting that method myself.
You still have to experience it, though.
Oh,
and
right,
I'm telling
you,
we show up at a town, and it does, and as Lois said, it takes us 4.5, sometimes 5 days to shoot our 28 minutes of television. And by day two, there's a crew of four of us. There's a shooter, Justin, and there's Gail does our sound, and it's Lois and I. It's the four of us in a van. And by day two of our 4.5 days there, we have a sense and a real feel of what that community is about. And every one of these 117 communities, and we're telling you the truth when we tell you that they're all different, and they all have a real sense of themselves, and we get to feel that. And that's what it takes as a visitor. Like, go someplace and spend a weekend, spend a day and a half, and you'll feel what that town is all about. Mm.
Find somebody who lives there and has lived there for a while. And you're going to find them either at the diner or at the post office. Walk into the library.
Yeah.
You know, public buildings are really great for that, because lifers, longtime people that live in these towns, gather at places, and that's where you want to go. The town square. Just ask somebody, what's good about your town? You're going to feel it.
Yeah.
Talking to Lois Maurer and John McGivern from Around the Corner with John McGivern. Back to your calls now. Russ is with us in Stoughton. Russ, hello.
Yeah, hi. I wanted to let everybody know that I learned to love Wisconsin having grown up in Illinois. And my father took us in the early 50s through the 60s up to Butternut, Wisconsin, and a Turtle Flambeau Flowage. It was Bryce County. And I learned to love Wisconsin there, and the fishing and fooling around and all that. And then later on, my wife's brother moved up to Vilas County in Boulder Junction on, it's Middle Gresham Lake. And I've been going there for the last probably 25 years.
Ooh.
It is a small lake, maybe 500 acres. But somebody in Wisconsin and Vilas County had the foresight to limit how many houses were up there.
Mm.
And even though it's a small lake, it there is very, very many private shoreline or open shoreline.
Cool. Russ, thank you so much. I want to bring John and Lois back into it. We've got so many of these great little natural spots tucked, and big ones too, for that matter, tucked around the state.
Gorgeous. Can I tell you, up north Wisconsin, we always try to do at least one every season that we call up north, because, you know, where is that really?
Right.
It's all a lot of places, and every little town up there is, you know, thinking that they are up north. So they do still feel different, but I'll tell you, they're a little more they're harder to cover, right, John? Because, you know, you can boat. Well, you know, you want to tell them about the boats?
Uh-oh.
Lois, be quiet.
It's just the but you know, sometimes as you get older, motion sickness becomes a thing.
I hear
you.
Sometimes
embarrassed
when you're
about.
Younger too. Yeah.
Really, it's been since I was a kid. It's like, oh, we got to get on that boat again. Oh no, here we go.
There's got to be some great outtakes there, I imagine.
Yeah.
We heard, love those. And people ask for them all the time.
Yeah,
they're like,
they
well, we
no, we lost that one. Sorry. Right. We heard from Paul on Facebook. Paul says, Racine. It has one of the country's best beaches, iconic Frank Lloyd Wright designed buildings, and the official state pastry, Kringle. Have you? I think I saw on the list you've been to Racine. Is that right?
Well, we did. We went to Racine in season one.
Ooh, right off the bat.
We were foolish. Can I tell you something, Rob? We were foolish and we said, let's do Racine.
And we weren't very good at it.
You can't do it. Like we now we'd love to go back and really pick an area of Racine that we could do. You know, because we were foolish.
And we did
Kenosha. You bit off more than
you could chew. We did Kenosha there, too. It was like, oh, look at that in 28 minutes.
Yeah.
So we'll go back to those communities.
Fantastic.
We would love to. We would love to. Mm-hmm.
Do you get a lot of requests from people like, hey, come to my town?
Mm-hmm. You got something for us, Rob?
No. Well, no. I'm not going to make requests.
Okay,
or are you like that band, you know, no requests? We don't do requests. Sorry.
No, we love to hear. We really do.
We do. Yeah. We do.
Now, is there, we don't have much time left. Give us a couple highlights of what's coming up in this new season. Apart from we heard about Story Hill and Milwaukee, where else are you going?
Well, let's see. In terms of all over the state, I think one of the ones that surprised us the most was Shawano. And Shawano is an area that a lot of people go to vacation in the summer. But we happen to have friends. One of the women on our crew, Gail, spends a lot of time up there. So they kind of had an inside track.
Yeah.
And there was I call Shawano the, ooh, we didn't expect that episode.
Okay. Uh-huh. Have you had a lot of those? This place really surprised the heck out of us?
Yeah.
Mostly,
yeah.
I am telling you.
Mostly.
There's a few, you know, out of the 117, there's a few that were like, what was that? Do you remember that? And it's like, no, I don't. And it's like, oh, my Lord. But mostly you remember all of them.
Yeah.
And they are surprising. In the middle of it, you think, wow. And when if in the middle of those 4 days, I say, you know, I want to move here, which they're sick of listening to me say that. But
at least three times this season, John wants to move.
It's true. Yeah,
and then he gets on the real estate sites and actually starts to look at everything.
I do.
I'm like, just put your phone away.
Well, thanks to both of you for joining us today. It's been a lot of fun.
Hey, thanks, Rob. It was great. Appreciate your help.
Anytime, Rob. Thanks for having us.
I've been talking to John McGivern and Lois Maurer. They are the co-creators of Around the Corner with John McGivern. We talked to them about some fun communities in Wisconsin, their travels around the state, and we previewed Around the Corner's 9th season that premieres on Thursday, February 6th with a look at Milwaukee's Story Hill neighborhood. Watch for that on your Wisconsin public television stations wherever you are in the state. Coming up after the news, being a better listener could make you happier, healthier, and more sociable. We'll talk to the author of the new book, You're Not Listening. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, a new report from a federal housing agency says homelessness in the state dropped last year compared to 2018. We'll talk to a local advocate about how that squares with what they see on the ground. First, who listens to you? As in, who takes the time to hear you out, ask follow-up questions, show genuine curiosity about what's on your mind and how you're feeling? That's one of the central questions journalist and New York Times contributor Kate Murphy asked all kinds of people around the world while working on her new book. It's called You're Not Listening, What You're Missing, and Why It Matters. Kate, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much.
Well, coming out of your book, one of the people you talk to uses the phrase, a crisis of listening. Do we have a listening problem in this country?
Well, it seems like we do, because everyone I interviewed, when I asked them that question, who listens to you? I would usually get a blank stare. Just, you know, and they would think about it. And, you know, these were people who were married, who had vast networks of friends and colleagues. And there was just that hesitation. And the lucky ones could maybe come up with one or two people, maybe a spouse or a parent or a sibling or a best friend. But generally, people came down on, you know, I really can't think of anyone who really listens to me. Or they talked about somebody like a psychotherapist or a hairdresser or a life coach, actually somebody they paid to listen to them. So, you know, it really makes you wonder, you know, is there a crisis of listening? And certainly a lot of the people I interviewed said that there is. And all indications are actually, if you go to any restaurant where everybody's looking at their phone, it does seem like it's a challenge for a lot of people today.
What are we losing if we're not listening?
Oh, gosh, so much. I mean, you don't learn if you don't listen. Listening is how we understand. It's how we cooperate. It's how we empathize. It's how we connect. It's how we fall in love. You know, listening is everything. You know, you cannot have a meaningful relationship unless you listen to the other person.
If we're bad listeners, and we could talk about what it means to not be a good listener, but if we're bad at it, are we doomed or can we get better?
Oh, absolutely not doomed. That's why I wrote my book. Is, you know, listening is a skill. And like any skill, it degrades if you don't do it often enough. And so it's really a matter of practice and awareness. And the people that I interviewed in the book are really virtuosic listeners. They're the Olympic athletes of listeners, people that have put in their 10,000 hours to become really good listeners. These are the people who are like CIA agents, focus group moderators, priests, bartenders, psychotherapists. And those are the people that have practiced their listening, that have really focused on it, that it's their job, like mine as a journalist, to listen to people. So no, you're not doomed. You can absolutely get better at it.
How can we diagnose ourselves to figure out if we are good or bad listeners?
Well, I think often what happens is the other person says, you're not listening, the title of my book. That's one thing. If you're also often misunderstanding people, if you're taken aback by people's reactions, another good one that I found is, you know, if you often give gifts that are off the mark, where the person doesn't like it, you know, that you really haven't been listening to that person to know what they would like. So that's another indicator. You know, are you often, you know, getting things wrong at work? Are you often sort of feel like you're not connecting with other people, that you're just not getting it? It's probably because you're not listening.
Kate Murphy is with us. We're talking about her new book. It's called You're Not Listening, What You're Missing and Why It Matters. Kate, I will confess to one bad listening skill that I've been guilty of many times in my life. You're listening to someone else talk and thinking, well, what am I going to say next? Because you want to, you know, maybe there's a good motivation. You want to be a part of the conversation. That is actually a really bad way to be a part of the conversation. Can you tell us how that can sabotage our listening?
Well, first of all, give yourself a break. Everybody does that. Everybody wants to be liked. They don't want to be caught flat-footed when the other person stops talking. They, you know, everybody starts thinking about what they want to say next because they want to be a part of the conversation. But what happens when you are thinking about what the other person, what you're going to say, you are losing focus on what the other person is saying. And as a result, you're increasing the chance you'll say the wrong thing when the other person stops talking. You know, just to show you're in good company, some of the research I came up with, they mapped out tens of thousands of conversations and looked at the gap between where the speaker left off and the listener launched in with what they wanted to say. And it was either a negative number, which means they started talking before the other person even stopped talking, or it was less than a blink of an eye. So that tells you the other person was spinning their wheels while the other person was talking to come up with something to say and missing a good bit of what the other person was saying.
It seems like in reading your book, part of the key here is allowing a conversation and someone else's part of the conversation to be about them and not about us, and just dedicating this time to another person. And I don't know, that seems hard for us to do in this day and age.
It is. You know, we're taught to lead the conversation, not follow it, you know, to make our mark, advance our brand, you know, stay on message, lead the narrative. But you miss out on so much when that happens. And also, it's fascinating. You know, one of the most valuable things I've learned as a journalist is everyone is interesting if you ask the right questions, if you allow them the time and the space to express themselves. And it really is. It's a great joy. And there's a lot. It's a lost art.
What are good questions to ask someone in that setting where you do want to find out more about them and keep them talking and hear this interesting stuff about them?
Well, certainly latch onto the things they are saying. You know, if they are telling a story, to get them to elaborate, get more detail. Your goal is to leave the conversation knowing how the other person is feeling and learning new things about the other person. Other questions, you know, if the conversation has kind of petered out and you're tempted to start talking about yourself instead of asking them a question, you know, really notice things about them. Ask some expansive questions. Like, for example, if somebody is wearing a piece of jewelry that's interesting or even not interesting, ask them if there's a story about the piece of jewelry, you know, whether it's a pin or an earring or a ring. There's always a story. You know, maybe even an article of clothing they're wearing. You know, and you know, one great thing is if you're a party, you know, how do you know the host or hostess? There's a story there too. And that leads off into all these paths. And if you can't come up with anything else, you know, one great question to ask people is if you could live anywhere in the world for 6 months, where would that be? I love that question because, you know, you might find a travel destination you want to go to. And also that tells you a lot about the other person. Where would they want to spend 6 months? And that leads to all kinds of other questions. The one thing I would warn people against is the usual questions that people use in social situations. What do you do? Are you married? Do you have kids? What part of town do you live in? You know, what school did you go to? Because, you know, that reflexively makes the other person defensive because you're not really trying to get to know them so much as trying to rank them in the social hierarchy. It's true. And so the other person, you know, it leads to that moment where they start their CV or resume recitation or their elevator pitch, the scripted spiel that they give in these situations. But you don't get to know the other person, you know, and it's deadly dull.
I want to bring on a caller. Obed is with us in Green Bay. Obed, hi.
Hi, Rob. Big fan of your show. I really liked your conversation today. I know it's almost done, so I'll make it quick. I just had a comment how you think that in the age that we live in and our society, how it's all about us, how we focus about ourselves, that we tend to just want to talk more about ourselves and not really take the time to actually listen.
Interesting, Obed. We just have a couple minutes. So I want to bring Kate in. A great question. What do you think, Kate?
Yeah, it is a great question. I think he's spot on. You know, as I said, you know, we're groomed to lead the conversation, not follow it. And it makes us lose curiosity about the other people if we're all just concerned with our self-presentation. But, you know, I'd like to propose the idea that, you know, we know about ourselves. You know about you. You don't know about the other person. And that's the real exciting thing, to find that out.
Obed, thanks a lot for that call. Kate, can you leave us in our last couple minutes with some practical exercises we could try with a stranger or someone close to us to give our listening a little boost?
Well, there's that idea of make it your mission when you meet someone to leave the conversation learning something about that person. You know, make sure that, and so when you leave the conversation, ask yourself, what did I learn about that person? And also importantly, how did that person feel about what we were talking about? So those are two questions you can ask. Another thing is I would say that you kind of think about this idea of when you get distracted either by your own thoughts or, you know, thinking about, you know, you need to get milk on the way home, that type of thing, to think about listening almost like meditation. So you acknowledge those distractions like you do in meditation, but then return your focus back to the speaker. You know, instead of in meditation, you might return your focus to your breathing or mantra. But in listening to another person, you're returning your focus back to the speaker.
In our last few moments, Kate, it seems like you started off in a pretty good place as a listener. Do you think you're even in a better place now after all the people you've met along the way?
I think so, yes. More than anything, it raised my awareness and probably reinforced my better tendencies towards listening. And like I said, it's a skill. And if you practice it long enough, you do get good at it. But, you know, raising your awareness just makes you exceptional at it.
Kate, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. It was fun.
That's Kate Murphy, author of the new book. It's called You're Not Listening, What You're Missing and Why It Matters. Coming up, we'll take a closer look at a new federal report that says homelessness in Wisconsin dropped last year. Our guest says those numbers don't match the reality here in the state. Find out more coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll find out how a 19th century chemist helped to ensure a safe food supply in the U.S. with the help of a group of volunteers known as the Poison Squad. Now, a federal housing agency says homelessness decreased in Wisconsin last year, but local advocates say those numbers may not tell the whole story. The Department of Housing and Urban Development sends out staff and volunteers every year on a single night in January to count the homeless population nationwide. According to those figures, Wisconsin saw a 7.5% drop in the number of people living without permanent shelter last year compared to 2018. But our next guest says those numbers may not tell us a whole lot about the scope of homelessness in the state. Joe Volk is executive director of the Wisconsin Coalition Against Homelessness. Joe, welcome back.
Well, thanks for having me.
Well, HUD, the Federal Housing and Urban Development Department, says, according to their numbers, there's a drop in homelessness in Wisconsin. Can you talk about those numbers and how meaningful they are?
Yes, we don't put a lot of stock in those numbers, to be honest with you. Those HUD numbers are basically from what's called a point-in-time count. It's when volunteers go out in various areas of the state to count homeless people, both that are in shelters and outdoors. A lot depends on how many people they count, such as how many volunteers they find, what's the weather, are the volunteers willing to go under bridges and abandoned buildings, those kinds of things. And it's just a one-night snapshot kind of count. We like to use the Department of Public Instruction, the state of Wisconsin numbers, because that is an actual number, that is an annual number. It's verified by social workers in the school system, and those numbers, in fact, have been going up about 9% for the last 2 years.
So you're seeing in Wisconsin, contrary to what we're hearing from HUD, an actual steady increase in homelessness here in Wisconsin, which would match up with what we're seeing around the rest of the country.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. I mean, I tell the story that a few years ago I was looking at numbers, the point-in-time numbers, the HUD numbers from Detroit, and noticed that they were down by about half from the year before. Again, it's a one-night snapshot. And so I called there to find out what they were doing so well. It turned out that, of course, at that time, Detroit was bankrupt, and it snowed that night, and Detroit doesn't plow the streets, so the volunteers couldn't get out and count people.
So given the increase in homelessness and talk in the legislature about funding for homelessness, so what do you see as some of the priorities here?
Well, the priorities, I mean, there's been a long historical track record led by Republicans in the state legislature and in the governor's office. There was a task force that was formed by Governor Walker, made recommendations to the governor. The governor Walker was in favor of those, gave those to the legislature. It was championed by the Republican leadership in the assembly, went to the Senate. There were 8 Senate Republican co-sponsors, but we haven't been able to get only but one of the 8 bills on the floor of the Senate because of just a very few senators that for some reason opposed to provide any assistance to homeless people and families.
One of those 8 did get through the Senate, and I understand there's a bill signing today. What does that one element of this multi-part package do?
That would increase almost a double, in fact, something called the State Shelter Subsidy Grant Program, basically to help non-profits provide shelter throughout the state, shelters around the state. It will help existing shelters to expand and also, quite frankly, to create some new shelters in rural areas where we know there's a problem that if a person needs shelter, if a family needs shelter, they sometimes have to go 2 or 3 counties away just in order to find one. So we're hoping that those dollars get out very, very quickly.
Talking to Joe Volk, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Coalition Against Homelessness, looking at new federal numbers on homelessness, what we're seeing here in the state, and efforts to turn things around on homelessness. Joe, there's a lot of talk nationwide about the idea of housing first. Can you talk about the housing first approach to homelessness?
Sure. The housing first approach basically says that that the best thing that you can do for a homeless person or family on their way to recovery from being homeless is to provide them with a place to stay. And once stable, once that they have a place to stay, then you can start to deal with such things as employment. If there's such issues, such as mental health issues or drug and alcohol issues, all of those things are best addressed when someone is off, when someone is not living on the streets.
Is this something that is being taken as the model that people are turning to in homelessness, the housing first strategy?
It is being used as a model. It's been essentially mandated by the federal government. Some advocates, including myself, do have some issues when trying to use one model for which is coming from the federal government for everybody. Seems that the Housing First model works very well for homeless single adults with mental health and alcohol issues. Not quite sure yet. The jury's still out as to how well it works for families.
So that seems like a key. There isn't a magic one-size-fits-all approach. Can you talk about how we need to tailor homelessness efforts to different individuals, families, and communities?
Well, it's obviously a very complicated issue. Probably the best way to explain it is the different strategies that need to be used for homeless single adults and homeless families. When trying to provide housing to a single adult, basically need a room. That room is probably going to be heated. If there's an alcohol or drug problem, that person can get on to SSI and have a pretty steady income. And so those kinds of issues can be dealt with. Families, you know, you've got children, you've got schools, you need a 2-3-bedroom apartment. You've probably got some issues with the energy company in terms of a back bill, in terms of getting heat turned on, all of those kinds of things. So the strategies for those two populations need to be relatively different, and so just a blanket housing first doesn't necessarily work for everybody.
Getting back to the efforts in the state legislature, the 7 out of those 8 bills that passed the assembly but not yet the Senate, what are the keys there that you want to see passed in the near future?
Well, there's a number of bills. They're probably the most important are 2 of them. One is to do some prevention around homelessness. In many cases, if you've got a family where the breadwinner because of a sick child or an illness in the family or the car breaks down, they miss some work and therefore get behind on the rent. Landlord probably wants to keep them as a tenant. They're a good tenant, but the landlord has to pay bills also. So to be able to just provide like a one-time modest amount just to pay some back rent is much more preferable than the family going through a shelter, the kids getting in and out of school, family losing all of their furniture, and all of that kind of thing. The other one that is pending in the Senate that we can't seem to get to move is to help homeless people become employed. The best way out of poverty is to have a job. Homeless people have some special barriers in that regard. And so those would be funds if passed by the Senate that could be used to assist homeless people in being gainfully employed.
What would you say to lawmakers and the governor to try to get this into the end zone on the rest of this legislation?
Well, of course, the governor is very much in favor of it. He certainly stated so. The Republican leadership in the Assembly, the Speaker, and the Majority Leader have been championing these bills. The majority of the state Senate, if you include both Democrats and Republicans, if these bills got to the floor tomorrow, they would pass. The problem is that there's this something called the Rule of 17, where the majority, led by Senator Scott Fitzgerald, basically says that if you can't pass it with just Republican votes, then we're not going to put it on the floor. but they would pass resoundingly if they got to the floor between both Democrats and Republicans.
We'll watch to see what happens, Joe. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
That was Joe Volk, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Coalition Against Homelessness. He was with us today to talk about a federal report that showed a drop in homelessness in Wisconsin last year and says that doesn't really reflect the reality on the ground. He was also with us to talk about various pieces of legislation that's made its way through much of the state legislature. One bill, as we heard, made it through the Senate and had a signing ceremony this afternoon with the governor. Seven more pieces of legislation still waiting for a vote in the state Senate. You can follow these stories and other big news in Wisconsin politics at WPR.org/news and get in-depth coverage of these kind of issues, often with great visuals and graphs. Find that at wiscontext.org. Yesterday on the show, we asked you to share your favorite sport to play or watch outside of the big major league types. A lot of you called in during the show with everything from platform tennis to Florentine football. The lesson there is, I think, don't play Florentine football. Sounds very dangerous. We kept hearing from more of you, though, over on social media. On the Ideas Network Facebook page, Lori mentions the Irish field sport of hurling. It has a league in Milwaukee. Lori says it's kind of like Quidditch. And Amy follows up, hurling is probably the coolest sport I've ever watched. And WPR's own boss, Mike Crane, also mentioned that as one of his favorite spectator sports. We heard from a bunch of other people with non-hurling related sports. Kirsta recommends marathons. I'm not clear if she runs them or watches them. Probably more, I'm not going to say fun to run, but I don't know. It's not something that I'd really watch that much or run in. Heather says roller derby. Elizabeth recommends lacrosse. We had a couple of people mention curling. Mike says curling. Moses, definitely curling. And our own Gene Purcell, who's in charge of Wisconsin Public Media here, he's a curler, a talented curler, I'm told, but not by him. He says he's not very good. Nancy recommends ice skating and gymnastics. Al says judo. And we heard from someone under the handle Kimball on Twitter, I play curling, another curler there in a league two nights a week in lacrosse. Great winter team sport and social opportunities, even with your opponents. You can keep sharing your favorite sports over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.